shake my nerves and you rattle my brain. Too much love drives a man insane. You broke my will, but what a thrill. Goodness and grace is great balls of fire.
Oh, welcome everybody. I'm Big Al Weekly with MusicChartsMagazine.com in Nashville, Tennessee. And yes, Jerry Lee Lewis, Great Balls of Fire. With me is CEO of our magazine, Jason Rogers. He and I is going to sit down and talk with a man that was the opening act for Jerry Lee Lewis and many others in country and rock and roll music. He's a member of the Rockabilly Hall of Fame. He's a CMA Award nominee, a comedian, a singer, entertainment marketing consultant extraordinaire, and he's a member of the Alabama Hall of Fame, Hollis Champion, a.k.a. Elmer Fudpucker. Boy, it's great to have you on with us.
Well, thank you so much, Al. It's a pleasure to be on here. In fact, it's a pleasure to still be living at my age. I live on a lake out here, Table Rock Lake, close to Branson, Missouri. In fact, I did my last show in Branson, Missouri, the 14th of December, 1996, and I hadn't been on a stage since.
50-plus years in music, but not only music, but marketing, songwriting, and you have opened shows and worked with entertainers that people have dreamed of. Tell me about your first time that you opened up for Jerry Lee Lewis, Elmer.
Well, the first time, Joe Namath had a club down in Alabama. It was in Birmingham, about three of them, in fact. He had one in Fort Lauderdale and had one in Tuscaloosa. He's a football player, you know, Joe Namath. And Jerry Lee was working there, and Mike Bickley knew Jerry. I'd worked with him, but didn't really know him. So Mike got on the stage and started working, and he said, "I got the Fudpucker out there. If you want to call him up," he said, "get him up here." And he hired me that night on the spot. Said, "How would you like to be my?" I've never had an open act. He said, somebody open, but he never had a, what he called a paid opening act. He offered me the job, and I took it, and we flew all over the world just about. I could really tell you some stories, but I can't.
It's okay, Elmer. When you get ready to think of one, you can tell us. But I just wonder, okay, what would make Jerry Lee Lewis want an opening act when he'd never had one before? Why do you think that he would hire you?
I never did figure that out. I never did ask him. In fact, I did a lot of his booking for him, and I took care of the money. And I will tell you one quick story. I was having to take care of the money to open the show, and, you know, in the dressing room, I said, he wouldn't take a check. I don't care if it was on Lloyd's of London. He wouldn't take it. I had to go to the bank the next day and cash it. And I remember one, I had 30-some thousand in a briefcase, and we was in Newport News, Virginia. And that was a Sunday night, or Saturday night. It was going to be in Atlanta on Sunday. And I said, "Jerry, I just can't keep carrying this money. I got too much cash." He said, "Well, I'll have my girlfriend take care of it." I said, "Okay." We got to the dressing room that night. I said, "Where's the briefcase?" She said, "Oh, they're going to clean up the plane," and said, "I left it on the runway." So I told one of the security guards for us to go back. Just so happened we got the briefcase. They hadn't started cleaning the plane yet.
Did Jerry Lee Lewis, did he know that she had lost the briefcase?
Not till we got to the dressing room, I asked about it. Oh, I had a heart attack. But I said, "Jerry, we got to hire a road manager. I can't handle the bookings and the, you know, opening the show and making sure we're collecting." You know, it's pretty fortunate with him. We only failed collecting our money. I started a thing many, many years ago, and I'm sure other people did it maybe before me. I don't know, but I got half my money before we left town, even when I was a little bitty, which never was a big act, but when I get up and making pretty good money, I still got half my money. I don't care if I was working a big company show, I still got half my money. You couldn't get it at a fair or out in Las Vegas. They didn't. You could depend on them paying you. But I always got half of it up front, and we only failed getting paid one time in some town in Alabama, I forgot. And I got Jerry to do the show anyway. I said, "Jerry, people have drove, we've got a sellout," I said, "and people have drove 100 miles to see you because you hadn't been in this area very much." And I said, "I hate to ask you this, but I wish you'd go ahead and do the show." He said, "Well, introduce me when you get done."
Well, he must have been really, of course, I've never had that opportunity to meet him, but you know, even as an energetic entertainer that he is, he must have been a very nice man.
He was really nice to me, and I got paid one night. We used to tour. We'd do three-day tours, and we'd do longer than that sometime, but most of the time, we'd have 3 days, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And we were working with Conway Twitty and Loretta. It was a three-star package. And Jerry didn't like to sign autographs, so he never sold nothing on tour. I sold all. I had more stuff in Walmart on my own, you know. But anyway, I said, Jerry, we need the Conway. Then they'll hold up a show 30 minutes to sell a cassette. That was back in the cassette days. Said, well, I don't want to sign autographs. Said, when I get done with the show, I'm beat. I don't want to go through this hour and a half, you know. I said, well, can I put out some T-shirts on you or get your album from, you know? He says, go ahead, you can have it all. He made a fatal mistake.
Oh.
Some nights I made more than he did.
Oh my gosh.
I never have put this over the air, so I might get shot. No, he was exceptionally good to me. We never had any problems. I'd sign his contracts, and he got up. In fact, today he don't work much. He's getting married again. I hadn't talked to him in a while, but he gets $60,000 for one night. When I started with him, he was getting $1,750, and lucky to get that.
We are talking with Hollis Champion, a.k.a. Elmer Fudpucker. Elmer, I may call you Elmer during our visit here, and I may call you Hollis a time or two. I want to talk a little bit about your break in your career, and I believe it was Ernest Tubb that gave you the opportunity. Am I correct?
He gave me my first break in every write-up. All the write-ups I try, I don't get many anymore, but I used to get a lot of press. And I never would send out. I didn't send out news releases. I didn't send out press releases. I sent out news releases where it was good for television and radio and press. Ernest Tubb, I don't know how he did it. He let me be on the Midnight Jamboree, which was a big thing in those days. I mean, it's like, it was right after Grand Ole Opry, as you know.
Yeah.
It was downtown there, right across, hanging across from Tootsie's Organ Lounge and from the Opry. And he let me sing on there. And all of a sudden, got me to play a lot of prayers with him. And Ernest Tubb, I have to say, I know Roy Acuff's got the name King of Country Music, but I say that Ernest Tubb has played more honky-tonks and more shows and didn't get paid for them, just got the band paid, than anybody I'd ever known. And he really did do me right. I mean, he was on a respirator in the last few shows I worked with him. He had to go back on the bus, but he still come out and sign them autographs. To me, that's a superstar now.
Well, Elmer, what was it like traveling on the bus with Ernest Tubb? I mean, what did you guys do? Did you sleep, or did you play cards, or what did you do all night traveling on
a tour
bus?
Well, Ernest liked to play cards, but if we was ever on the road with Porter Wagoner, they would get on a bus, and Porter was a pretty good poker player.
You recorded some Hank Williams stuff in rock and roll, but you wrote a song called Old Red Devil. You co-wrote it. Let me play just a little shake of it here before we talk about it, and I want people to hear this, okay? All right, here we go, guys. We're going to listen to Old Red Devil. Here's Hollis Champion.
Lord, I'm gonna quit my mean, this ain't going honky-tonking again. Black snakes crawling in my room, they won't let me be. It's that old red devil creeping up on me. I could fly a long time, thought that I was smart. Shooting dice and drinking wine and breaking poor girls' hearts. My past overtook me, now I know I've lost.
Hollis Champion, a.k.a. Elmer Fudpucker. Old Red Devil, why'd you write that?
Well, I'll tell you the truth, a guy named Sam Bryant wrote that. It was a bluegrass song.
Really?
And he said, I've never, man, he loved bluegrass music so much. I said, Sam, I can't sell bluegrass. I can't even sell nothing. But I said, I might if I can put a saxophone on it or, you know, and I had a saxophone player that couldn't play but in one key, two keys rather. So I had to get something simple. And, you know, I really, actually, the song, to be honest with you, they didn't press very many. It's on Inco. I recorded it in Fayetteville, Tennessee, I believe it town was. And Overseas, right now, they're bootlegging the heck out of it. Somebody said they paid $200 for it. They didn't press for a couple thousand, I don't think. And somebody paid $200 for one on, is it eBay? Is that what they call it? I don't know much about that. But,
yeah.
I had to buy, tell you the truth, I didn't know any of this stuff be worth nothing. I didn't keep nothing. Just a bunch of write-ups I kept. But I didn't keep all this stuff. And I had to buy one from the bootlegger out of Philadelphia because he was getting them out of Germany. I bought my own record back, paid, I think, $19 for the whole album.
Well, you've been in every end of the business. I mean, you started out in rock and roll. You opened up for people like Jerry Lee Lewis. And we'll get into some of the other folks that you opened shows for and worked with. And country music, Ernest Tubb. But you chose to go into more or less of a novelty business and do what they call party records. How in the world did you figure that out? I know you're a marketing guru. Is it, you just did it?
Well, let me tell you, I used to have a motor home. We bought, Mac Vickery and I were together 10 years. And we would drive, I mean, we were dates. Nobody would believe how many days. Only two people beat us. That was Ernest Tubb and Little Jimmy Dickens. We worked 1 year, 207 days, counting the overseas. We did a lot of overseas stuff. But I started counting trucks one day. And in 1 mile, I counted 20 trucks. Mm-hmm. This is late at night. I was getting ready, I guess, to go park in the search truck or something. I said, man, there's a market. It hadn't really been tapped that well. And then that opportunity come along, the truck driver told us what they hated, and that DOT, I don't know how many sold, but I mean, I've sold as many as 20,000 a day in one day, and that, I don't mean that boastful in any way, that don't happen very seldom. Now it does, hey, they claim they sell a million in one day, but I never was in that kind of category, but I did sell.
Yeah, you did. I remember that song, actually, Elmer, being played on nighttime radio. I can play just about 45 seconds of it to...
No, don't play it.
I'm
trying to save your job.
I know the song real well. I know just when to take it out. So we're gonna listen to just about 40 seconds.
Well, you got guts.
Oh, I do. And you know, it is a song that... In the industry, the trucking industry, just like you said, I want you to tell us, like we talked about off air, how you wrote the song and how quick it sold, and then we'll talk a little bit more about some other things that happened in the trucking industry, and I think you helped probably bring in a big attention to the truck drivers. They paid a lot of attention to this, but so here's a little bit of DOT. Here's Elmer Fudd-Pucker. Let's take a listen.
Well, I topped the rock and I started on down, doing 75, head for my hometown, ride broken springs in a tractor with one eye. 3 days popping those little white pills, got air leaks hissing and a humming wheels, cause I gotta get home to that pretty woman of mine. Got a logbook, ain't been touched in days, a truckload of beer and I'm overweight, past them anteaters and all them Peter cars.
There it is, DOT, Elmer Fudd-Pucker.
Well, Al, I don't have anything going out now, but I'll get you a job.
I think that's about as far as I can go with that one, buddy.
Well, I'll tell you what. We figured I worked a fair in Arizona for a guy that was the head of the DOT for Arizona. He was a entertainment director, and I worked a fair out there. And he said, we really hated you. I said, well, till they drive up to the scales and start playing it all over the United States. said, you're not too bad a guy, I guess. I said, well, really, I try not to be, you know, but I was surprised you hired me for the fair.
Well, you do. You stand for something. I mean, you've made quite a bit of money from just that one song, or, you know, you made a good living at it. Tell us a little bit about that song, DOT. You told me a while ago. Tell us again, because I want everybody to hear the reason and how you wrote that song.
We were sitting in a fast food restaurant in Nashville, and we were just eating some breakfast, and Mac Vickery and Mitch Torok, which you probably don't remember him, but he wrote Mexican Joe and Caribbean and was a pretty big writer at one time. And we asked a truck driver, or he did rather, said, what does the truckers hate most? He said, the damn DOT. I said, well, tell us stuff about it. And we started writing it on a napkin. In fact, that fast food business backed our album. They didn't know it with their napkins. The reason I did so good with DOT, it forced me into the distribution business. Nobody would distribute. I got forced into being a booking agent, too. Mm-hmm. I did a lot of dates for myself and Jerry Lee and Gilbert Jones and everybody. But I figured I had to start all these companies, not by choice. In fact, all I ever wanted to be, Al, was a country music singer. Mm-hmm. I'm going to sing you. I never have time to promote an album or nothing, but I cut one, and I think it's pretty good, but it must not have been too good because nobody wanted to buy too many of them.
Well, I don't know. I see that you were actually a pioneer of what they call party albums, and you even earned a gold record for a song called Nudist Colony, released in the mid-60s.
Yeah. That's right. I'm gonna tell you a quick story. I've really been good. The good Lord's been good to me. I got a lot of awards, but let me tell you my greatest award.
Okay.
I was working Hot Springs, Arkansas during the race. Maybe you're not familiar with Hot Springs, but it's a big tourist place, and they have horse racing there once a year.
Mm-hmm.
And I was working down there, and at that time, I think it was 1969. I'm not sure the year. I have to look at the award. They called me from Governor Winthrop Rockefeller. He was governor of the state. He was one of the Rockefellers with the oil business.
Uh-huh.
He was governor, and his secretary called me and said, you're working Hot Springs in the papers. Said, would you mind doing a show for the, it's sort of the, I call them special people who got a little mental problem or something. Uh-huh. I said, man, I don't mind. I won't cost you nothing. I'll just take the band. We'll go over and do it in the afternoon. And I always, on those kind of shows, I call up somebody out of the audience. Now, this made tears come to my eyes. And this guy, I called him up out of the audience, and we sung some gospel song. I can't remember. Some that everybody knows, like I'll Fly Away or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
And he hadn't talked for 4 years. I got him singing and didn't know this till the next day. He hadn't talked for 4 years.
Really?
And that showed you there's a higher power that, up there.
Oh,
and they gave me the Rockefeller Award, the Arkansas Traveler. And that award, I've got a wall full of them, but I'm grateful for all of them, but that one I treasure so much.
Well, there's something I think people certainly need to know about Hollis Champion. You've never done drugs, and you've never drank beer or liquor, right?
I don't drink nothing. I've tasted some champagne, and when I go to a party, they used to call me Mr. Party Man, which, you know, what a lie that was, but I lived it anyway. I made it like I was. People used to say, boy, the last time I was at a party with you, you sure got high. What it was, they was high and I was low. And I remembered everything. Guess that's one thing I was fairly successful because I used to listen a lot because I had good teachers. I had Frank Denny, and I had some good teachers, and Colonel Parker, he knew him, and I knew all the other great promoters of the time, and I listened to them, and I saw how they did it, and I learned from other people. What I did, I learned what they knew and adapted into something that worked for me, like a fan club.
Right.
I started Fan Clubs of America, which did real well, and I had a T-shirt business probably made me the most money of anything I ever owned.
Yeah, so you had T-shirts, bikinis, bumper stickers, country music books, magazines, glasses, and Swamp Root Potion. What's Swamp Root Potion?
It's a sex potion. I can't tell you on the air what it's good for, but I sold one distributor. I'll tell you how I started. I was coming off, me and Mac was coming in, and we stopped to get gas. And this guy had a nosebleed, and this is a true story. I said, he said, man, I wish I could stop this nosebleed. And I use this Swamp Root potion. I did a whole comedy routine about what it did, you know.
Yep.
I use it in the Sears Die Hard battery and all that kind of stuff, you know. And, it was a sex potion.
Yeah.
I won't get into that. But anyhow, this guy said, I said, I got something. I never had to try to sell any of it. It just used it as a prop. So I said, I got something here. I don't know where it just take color in the water. I had every color. I'd have pink, purple, green, whatever color you wanted. I'd sell it to you. And at the show, I sold it. And this guy said, If it's only a dollar, it's worth that. I felt bad ever since then. I ought to give that guy a dollar back, but I was more wicked back then. And one distributor, Scott Sales, said, "Mr. Scott, I got a winner here. I already know. I done test marketed. I know it'll sell." He said, "Well, pitch me. It's like 6,800 bottles. I mean, a lot, because he was a big distributor, covered seven states." He said, "Bottle me up." Well, I didn't have no bottling machine. I had to do it all. You know, I put the labels on and the back and front, and we put the cake color. So me and Vickery had to go on a tour, and I hired some of my buddies, which they like to drink a little bit. And I said, "Now look, guys, don't get in any trouble." I said, "Pour that cake color and stuff in the bathtub and just throw them bottles in there. Don't throw them in there, but they were pharmaceutical bottles." And I said, "I need this 6,800 bottles out pretty quick." Well, they all got to drinking, and the police came, and what a high! I've lived an exciting life, but I got to manage 6,800 bottles of Swampwood potion.
Didn't have any of them returned, huh?
People bought them. Say if you got everything, you know, you don't like you don't really need nothing.
Yeah.
You'll buy that and give to a friend, you know, as a gag gift. And I just sold a heck of that colored water, and I've even had them come to shows, and some of them swear by it. I said, "Don't have no odor." I said, "Everything good don't have to have a smell to it." I said, "Some vodka don't smell either, you know."
You even make Granny Fuddruckers famous homemade chocolate chip cookies. Do you make those yourself?
7-Eleven. I don't do that. I have got out of all. Only thing I have now, I still own a lot of little things. I own a trading post up here around Branson. And I built a stage, and I was going to do some performing there, but I had an open heart surgery, and I haven't done nothing since then. I've just been laying back, and I'm fixing to start doing something because, you know, you do that for 53 years, it's hard to quit it.
Yes, sir.
Let me tell you about this. I got a new pacemaker.
Uh-huh.
I'll tell you about this. They said I had to have triple bypass surgery because I really need four. I said, "Man, I won't have enough money, but just for three, let the fourth one can't take care of itself, let it suffer." So I got the triple bypass. About a month later, they called me and said, "You're going to have a pacemaker." I said, "Y'all have done took every penny I've got, all my records and royalties. I don't have no money left." So I said, "Me being a promoter, I ought to be able to get one of them pacemakers, find a used one, you know." So I started to go into mortuaries and feeding in the casket, you know, see if they had one. I could get a used one. And I got thrown out of one of them. And then I said, "Well, I got to have one." So I started, a lot of people now have open grave yard. They don't have a church service. They have a graveside service. And I started going to them graveside services, and they really got mad, especially when I started feeding around them women, you know. So that's what happened to me.
Oh, I think you're starting your career already, Elmer.
Well, that's pretty fresh material there.
Well, we're going to try that out on a lot of people. We're talking with Hollis Champion. And he is a rascal down in Branson on Table Rock Lake, a.k.a. Elmer Fuddpucker. I got to make sure that I say that promptly or correctly, or we might get into another colorful metaphor that we don't want to, Elmer.
Let me tell you something, Al. I have changed it once. It used to be Jim Fuddpucker. I had to change it to Elmer. Nobody could say Jim. So I said, they said, "You should change your name." So I did. I changed it to Elmer.
Why couldn't they say Jim Fuddpucker? I'm trying to think. Yeah, okay.
I don't know why. They just said, I found out later that it was the last name they wanted me to change. I thought it was the first name.
I know. All right, Elmer, your character. We're going to get to the seriouser side of you because I already see something here I'm curious about. The serious side of Hollis Champion. You did a series or a few serious recordings, and one was called "I Love You, America." Tell me about that song.
Let me tell you what happened on that particular thing. It's the best thing I've ever written, and I didn't write it for money. I was doing a tour of Japan just by myself, and they would produce me a band everywhere I came, you know, went into. The first show, I was real tired. I had been on, I worked in New Orleans, then I went to San Francisco, and then Hawaii, and then Okinawa was the next night. But I went to sleep in one of them wide belly tits with a lot of seats, you know.
Yeah.
And I lost my passport. A big crowd was standing out there at the airport, you know, like I was a big star or something to meet me. And I couldn't get off. I had to fly all the way to Hong Kong. And one of the stewardesses found it in the seat where I'd been laid down sleeping. I'm just a nervous wreck because after one of the few dates I've ever missed, I went back. And on the way back from Tokyo after the tour was over, I wrote this song. I said, "Hello, America. I just came by here to make a few apologies. I hadn't really been a very good citizen." It's the best thing I've ever written. In the end, I'll tell you the end. It says, "As long as you keep that flag high and wave it proud, we'll always have the greatest land this side of heaven. I love you, America. I love you." And I wanted to get Walter Brennan to do it, but he was always off with John. When I was in Hollywood, he was always out with John Wayne somewhere making a movie. I thought he would have been the perfect one, so I just did it myself. Didn't do it for money.
All right, Elmer. Well, let's get that song in here, I Love America, and let's let everybody hear your serious side of Hollis Champion.
"Hello, America. I just thought I'd come by and make a few apologies. You see, I hadn't been a very good citizen. Well, a lot of times, I hadn't even taken the time to vote. I've helped pollute your air, your water, your soil. And America, as I look at you, I sure see a lot of scars. But come to think about it, you're over 200 years old. And then I think about all the things you've been through. A war between the states, two world wars, Korea, Vietnam, and some of the worst political scandals any country's ever known. As I look at your flag, the red makes me think about all the brave men and women that gave their lives so that I could live under this great flag of yours. I see the blue. I think about the sky. It has always been so beautiful before acid rain and all the other chemicals we put in the air. I look at the white. And I think of purity and of our forefathers wrote the greatest document ever written by man, the Declaration of Independence. You made everything so great for us, America, but we sure have messed it up. America, do I see a tear? Yeah, there's tears in your eyes. Well, I sure know why. The farmers are losing their lands to the highest bidder. Land that's been in the family for generations. And people from other countries are buying up all the property. And pretty soon we won't have a place to work. And something's wrong with our school system too, America. Every year we graduate thousands of students that can hardly read or write. A lot of us have just become plain lazy. We forgot about the great union slogan, a day's work for a day's pay. But you know, America, it's not all our fault. Many of our manufacturers, they forgot about quality and just think about profits. And I know these politicians must really upset you. They'll promise anything to get elected and then throw away the taxpayers' money with both hands. And I know the drug scene, well, it must be one of your biggest problems. I'm gonna go out and tell the youth to say no. Because a lot of us are guilty of the drug scene, not just the youth. And religious leaders, some of them are a disgrace. And just the other day I asked myself, what's wrong with America? Then I looked in the mirror and there was the problem. Why, it's me and millions of others just like me. That's why I'm here in America, to tell you I'm sorry. And please give me another chance. I know I don't deserve to live under this great flag, but I'm asking you to give me just one more chance. I'm gonna take your flag and I'm gonna wave it high and I'm gonna wave it proud. And I'm gonna tell the factory worker, the farmer, the truck driver, the religious leader, politicians, the military men and women to come join me and let's carry your flag together. Let's wave it high and let's wave it proud. And I'm gonna tell the youth of our land that you really need it. more than ever before, and it's their future. I'm going to tell them to keep their hearts strong and their minds straight. And America, what makes me so sad? A lot of people are saying America's all washed up. But I know better than that. Because America, there's two things that you and I know that they don't know. As long as our people believe in God and country and keep that flag high, we'll always have the greatest land this side of heaven. I love you, America. God bless you. I love you, America.
I got guys in Nashville the first time I went up there, and I went in this guy's office. Hopefully not boring you with this, but I went in this guy's office. He said, I said, I'm from Alabama. I'm a singer. He said, we don't need no singers. Back then, it wasn't no music role. He was just out in one of his little hotel, you know, little bitty cubbyhole office. He said, we don't need no singers. He said, when you leave, close the door. Now, I turned my head and went back out. Like that, I said, I write songs too. He said, we don't need no songwriters either. That was my first rejection in Nashville.
How did you feel about that? What year was that, Elmer?
Late 50s, early 60s. It had to be early. But I was a disc jockey. I started out at 7. My brother had one of them little radio shows like the Stanley Brothers Sings About.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I used to say, good morning, everybody. You're listening to the Summer for Pal, 6:45 or whatever. I just didn't say much. I took them on and took them off. That's how I started in radio. I still love radio. You know, I really love radio.
We do have Jason Rogers with us. I'm kind of waiting for him to inject a few questions. I think, you know, when you apply for those credit cards and they say, well, we've got a person that's going to monitor the conversation for quality assurance, I think Jason's just monitoring us, isn't he?
I think it. You know what they really do that for? They want to tape it where they can sell the thing to somebody else where they can share, you know, I don't know how to give a number, which I don't care anymore. I'm not trying to hide from anybody, but they sure get them phone numbers on these cell phones somehow.
Hey, what's your website?
Oh, did I tell you how to get it? Well, I don't know nothing about them websites. I don't even know how to turn a computer on. But I'm going to get one. I'm going to get what they call a, I can't plug the name of the company I'm going to get it from. But anyway, I'm getting one of them laptop things, you know.
Hey, what about a Johnny Cash? Everybody has questions always about anybody that ever met Johnny Cash. When did you meet Johnny Cash?
We was working a high school auditorium in some place. I don't know. We worked a lot in Michigan. And back then, we worked schoolhouses. And he was on Sun Records and... Of course, Johnny was, you know, we always hired a promoter, always hired a local act to go on. The main reason was not to give the guy any exposure. He was trying to get more people to the show because all their relatives, they would advertise all over the county that he was going to be on the Johnny Cash show. So this local guy was tearing the audience up. This promoter come, our dressing room was a school, you know, a school room with desks and so forth. And he said, Mr. Cash should not pull this guy off the stage. He said, he's really tearing the audience up. Johnny said, no, that's okay. Let him enjoy himself. Watch who goes home with the money tonight. So that's a true story. That's pretty funny. But it was done altogether different. We didn't have no big auditoriums and things back in those days. We worked high schools and little bitty theaters, and I worked in Branson. Theater, first show I worked in Branson was at the Owens Theater, and Gene Autry used to work there, and Roy Rogers. They'd come in on Saturday and do a, you know, have a Roy Rogers movie, and Roy would be there in person with the Sons of the Pioneers or something. But that's how it all started right there.
By the way, we're talking with Elmer Fudpucker. His real name is Hollis Champion. And not only some of the great comedy and some of the other acts and things that he did in country and rock and roll music, he had a serious side, as we heard just a few moments ago with I Love America. Elmer, I would like to go ahead and play another beautiful country song. It's a serious song that you recorded. It's called I Don't Believe I'll Fall in Love Today. So once again, here is Elmer Fudpucker.
much too busy loving you. Each night I pray I'll wake at dawn and find another in my heart and on my mind. Then I awake and hear my poor heart say, I don't believe I'll fall in love today.
Champion, a.k.a. Elmer Fudpucker.